When I was young, my parents owned a children's clothing store in a shopping mall. Across the way from their store was a record store, Mother's Record Shed. It was owned by this couple, older than my parents, Art and Jerry Miller. I thought the mother graphic that was part of the store's logo was perhaps based on Jerry, though it didn't really look like her.
Yeah, he used to come into the store and talk music with Art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Art sold me my first album.
Pink Floyd, Dark Side
of the Moon. Because, see, Art likes that. He likes that kind of music.
It didn't get talked about at the Thanksgiving dinners or Christmas parties my family and the Millers ended up having for years and years after we first met them. But it was rumored that Jerry had once been a singer, had recorded albums, had been a star in her day. In 2002, two of Jerry's albums were re-released, repackaged onto a single CD, and my mom bought a copy of them.
Did you know you were released again? He's been playing me for years and everything was getting so worn. He said, they don't re-release you pretty soon. he said, it's so scratchy. So what he would do, he'd play a little bit and he'd lift the needle up, you know, and talk and then put the needle. Let's get back to Jerry.
There she was on the cover of the original albums, Jerry Adams, It's Cool Inside, and Playing for Keeps. What kind of a career had Jerry had years before she ran the record store? I thought of Jerry as my grandmother, and here was a part of her life I found fascinating but knew nothing about. I was fortunate enough to sit down with Jerry, Art, their dog Muff, and my wife Megan, and look at her press clippings, newspaper articles, and listen to her recordings while she talked about her recording life under the name Jerry Adams. There are plenty of people who say they want to grow up to be a recording star, but few who have the talent or ability to make this dream become a reality.
Imagination is funny.
I thought, well, we'll start from the beginning. And my name was Doris at that time.
The very beginning.
But that was Doris May, and, you know, hey, they had Doris Day. My mother played one of those old-time rump-a-dump-a-dump pianos. She played what they call the old-time jazz. Before my sisters were born, I'd go with them occasionally because I couldn't get a sitter, and usually it was an upright piano, and I would sit by her legs down at the bottom. let's watch her foot going. But she knew it was okay, and then I would come out, and they'd say, all right, we want you to do something. And why don't you do Mae West? And of course, mm-hmm. I would strut my stuff. And, you know, why don't you come up see me sometime? And I sang in school. I had a wonderful teacher in elementary. Jeannie Pace was her name. I was a very, very shy kid. Very. So I would get in. I loved music. I wasn't particularly interested in sports. So they have like the choir, and she'd say, she would force me. She'd say, come on. I want you to get up. No, I'll do scenery. And she really pushed that. I did write a play. Well, I've always been surrounded with that kind of thing. I wrote a play in elementary school. By that time, I guess I was in the fifth grade, sixth grade. And they presented it in front of the whole school. Picked my own cast. But that was her. Mm-hmm. She pushed that.
That's not to say that every step along the way went according to plan.
I remember one concert when I was so scared I fell. Coming out, you know, of course, that even makes it worse. But back in the back of the auditorium was a voice. It was a boy's voice. He said, it's okay, get up and sing the song. And I felt better. I did get up and I sang the song, you know. I found that I could communicate better through music or song or whatever than I could if I was in a corner and come talk to me. No way, Jose.
It wasn't easy for her mother to see her young daughter working late, but she was supportive.
She's afraid for me, you know, being out. When I was in high school, I'd go on a streetcar and make two or three changes. And there's this one nightclub, and Freddie Luck was the guy when I told you he'd job around. was his name. And I'd go in, I was still in high school. I took my homework, so I worked in a drugstore for right after school, and then change, go home and change, and then go with, he was at like across town working a club, and I was not allowed in the club, I was too young. So I would have to sit in the office, and I'd go in and sing my songs, and go back to the office. She was a little concerned because sometimes I wouldn't get home till 11:30. Well, Freddie was nice in the fact that he let me sing early. I made $2 that went toward trying to buy a dress. That thing, that concerned her. You know, she was a little concerned, and then she was afraid I'd get mixed up with the wrong crowd. And
Jerry persisted, and her mother came to a realization.
She finally understood that all I want to do is sing. This other means absolutely nothing to me. I want to feel when the lights come up, and I want to feel that rush, because as a shy kid, you don't have that. There's never been anything I ever wanted to do beside that. Now I worked for a lawyer part-time after school, so I've done that, and I've done bookkeeping, and I did all these things were a method to get there.
Right out of high school, Jerry performed every chance she got.
I wanted to sing, and I got, whenever I had the opportunity, I don't care. You want to sing a song? Yeah. So I sang a lot, and then after I got out of high school at 17. I was going to go on to University of Cincinnati, and money was very tight. So that was a big decision. What am I going to do here? Mm-hmm. How am I going to be? And again, I was jobbing around town with different bands and so forth. Your organization is going to have a dance and a dinner, and they need music. So those bands, there's a lot of those bands around, even here in Seattle. And sometimes they'd need a singer, sometimes they didn't want one. You get a singer, you put your name in the union. And so most of the time, you use whatever they had, and you better be up on the new tunes. Or, well, I do this certain key. So they would, if they had big arrangements for the orchestra, they could break it up every once in a while with a trio and a singer, and maybe I would do Blue Moon. That was always a big one.
Soon, Jerry was working with Gardner Benedict and touring.
Gardner needed a singer to go on the road. It's Gardner Benedict. This is a picture. That's Gardner's band. He plays piano, and of course I got featured. So that was like the start of, oh boy, am I a big star or what? And we worked all around Ohio, Toledo, nice hotels. And we'd be there maybe for a month or two. Then we went to Florida. We worked down there for about 2 months.
By the age of 18, Jerry was living her dream.
So was that scary? Were you afraid to leave home or to run away?
Yeah. I was getting, look at me. You know, I got a job singing, doing what I want to do. That's the whole thing. That when I came back into town, I was jobbing again because Gardner Benedict went into a place called Beverly Hills Country Club in Cincinnati over in Kentucky. Big, always had big stars, and of course there's no room for a vocalist. So I started jobbing in Cincinnati again. And I got a call from Teddy. Now, Teddy went to the same high school I did, but he was out before I came in. So I'd heard about him. His reputation was just very talented. Mm-hmm. He writes great stuff. And
Mr. Robin. Before long, Jerry had joined Teddy Raymore's band.
After Gardner was Teddy Raymore, and that's these guys. That was the group. This is the group. This is Teddy. That's Larry Olive's husband. Olive and I are still friends. Larry had a brain cancer, and Lee, I still keep in touch with him. This group worked at Danny's for almost 3 years. 2 years, I'm sorry, 2 years. It got such an audience that they'd be lined up around in the stove.
Wow.
Danny had an electric room, he had a shed, he had a room to put a bar in there. So he could sell more booze while they're waiting to get into the marches. Cheer up the sunshine, live loud, be happy. And he had this group with a sax player. And he got called into the service. So Teddy decided, well, he and Larry, they grew up together, very close friends. They said, hey, why don't we get a girl? And, okay, Larry thought that was a good idea. Teddy thought it was a good idea. So he said, yes. And I said, hey, we're going to go to the town. I said, well, I think Jerry Adams is back in town. So he says, who's Jerry? Who? Well, she just came back off the road with Garland's band. So he called me and he said, we're thinking about starting a group with a girl singer and doing four-way harmony. And I said, well, I've never done that before. I really was like, who? I'm the wrong person for that. And he said, well, we've never done it before either. Well, let's go down and see what kind of sound we get. So I went down to the club. He said, hey, this can we do an old one, like, I don't know, real simple. Love you like I do. Bum, ba, da, da, real corny, you know, kind of thing. And we started off and said, hey, we got a good plan. And Larry said, now, I'm going to give you some drums. Why don't you play some sushi? I said, well, I've never played drums before. He said, it's okay. We're gonna try this out. Well, I was having trouble. And he said to me, and he saw me pick up a cigarette and light it. Or a pencil, I guess it was. And he said, you're left-handed. And I said, yes. He said, take everything I tell you, reverse it. You know, and it worked out great. I started, you know, swinging right along with him.
Jerry outgrew this band and teamed up with a new band.
Okay, we got Ernie Mariani, and we got another group called the Tattletales.
Look down that lonesome road before you think of traveling or not.
This was recorded on DG label, Dizzy Gillespie's label.
Jerry began to develop a distinct style, as this recording discusses.
Some interesting things started to happen in our repertoire, and that not only did we do the usual songs you might expect in clubs and lounges, but we started to do unusual songs. And Jerry Adams, because of that, was starting to develop a dramatic flair.
After this, we went in and I had done Love for Sale live, and there was a reporter in the Cleveland dealer, I think, Plain Dealer or something like that, that wrote me the most greatest review anybody could have possibly gotten. He said, it's too bad that Cole Porter's not alive, because this is the way he meant that song to be sung.
Wow.
Before that, we did a tune called Why Do You Have to Go Home? That's on that too. With Lee and Larry wrote the thing. And it was given an A- in Downbeat magazine. And this is a girl that has such great control.
Although she was recording for DG Records, Dizzy Gillespie's label, she was not getting to where she wanted to be. Soon she was spotted by Frankie Lane, who piqued Mitch Miller's interest in Jerry's style, too.
Frankie Lane came in to see the group, and he wanted to publish the song, plus take that, and he really liked the group, and then he came into Detroit to see us, you know, and I did Moonlight and Rise. You know, I used to change key there too. Well, I didn't know that, but that's, you know, it's a natural change to go up to sing. So he took the song, put in his publishing company. DG Records recorded it. It was such a small company, you know, and that's what he gets into, that trying to get people to distribute it, you know, was hard, even though I got great reviews on everything we had done, you know, and everything. So Frank wanted me to go on. And so he took it to send to the group, to Mitch. Mitch says, we've got so many groups. We've got the Brothers Four, we got the four lads, we got this group, we got that group. I don't want another group, but I want the girl.
Working with Mitch Miller in New York, Jerry refined her recording technique.
You get the music ahead of time, you show up to record. It was in an old church in New York. Of course, I think they've changed that now. So, like when we did Love for Sale, this is later on, they had the sound go down through the basement and back up. That's the way they did it that day. But now they have the things marked on the thing. In order to get that far away, hollow mm-hmm. echoey sound. Mm-hmm. So I would just stand there and sing to keep it low, like I was coming in from the mm-hmm. street. So the recording thing, but that old church, going down the steps and coming to the bathroom and back up again, was great. It gave you a whole sound. So the same thing with like Moonlight in Vermont and so forth. In order to get a hollow, big sound in the hall or something like that, they had to do that.
Soon she joined Percy Faith and his orchestra for a recording of Moonlight in Vermont. Time magazine, in its December 7, 1953 issue, described Jerry this way. A new songstress reminisces enticingly about old New England in a wistful tune that is hitting the comeback trail.
Before I recorded that, I got a call from Percy Faith, who was a big orchestra thing man, and he called me and said, okay, what key do you do this in? And I said, well, okay, but the second time around for the second chorus, when you finish the bridge, I want to go up mm-hmm. half a step. I want to go to the key from whatever it was, to whatever. It was kind of into a sharp key, but it was richer
mm-hmm.
For some reason. It just it take that lift and woo, you know, up with it. So he said, okay, we'll do it. And I hadn't met him yet. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still in New York. I'm still working out with the kids out in Cleveland or Detroit or someplace. I knew that song because I was singing it every night, so it wasn't have a problem. He said, well, how about, he said, they heard you sing in Atlantic City, Happy to See You, Joe. That was the Warriors when they came down for the contract. And I said, yeah. He said, well, let's do that one too. So, okay. But I meant to tell him to give it a jazz thing because Ernie Bernhardt was playing trumpet behind me, and he used to give it like a bluesy. And happiness and woo-doo-doo-doo. Kind of a bluesy where Percy's was like, lush and lovely and mm-hmm. old. We went in to record, and I had to record four sides in 3 hours. You have to be ready, ready, ready. This time I really was scared. I walked in, and there's the start of it. Wow. I walked into that, and I really was, whoa, I don't know whether I'm going to do this one or not.
That's a lot of musicians.
That's a lot of musicians. And here's Mitch and Percy Faith and myself talking things over. Oh, there's the review by Windsor Frank. This is before we did it. I was still waiting there to talk to Mitch. Worked out when they came out to meet me there with his cigar. And and this is at the session, and he was really pleased. That was the one that said, hey, this is no longer a little kid that's working with the groups. I kept waiting for that star. You see, that singing thing was always the biggest thing with me. So, and I knew I could do it. I figured somewhere out there, somebody's gonna like me. You know, I like what I sing or what I say. Percy Faith was just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I thought they did a good job.
A highlight of her career was a Columbia Records showcase.
There's Mitch, myself, Jerry Vale, and these are all people.
Yeah, stuff, huh?
Yeah.
This we drove down from Detroit for their big thing here.
Uh-huh.
That they built the needle. I think it's on the back.
World's Fair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we drove down to make a guest appearance.
The show had all the big Columbia artists.
Then they all went into the show. Well, that was my year. We all have a night. This one is yours. Because this is everybody performing. See, there's Tony working.
That's Tony Bennett she's talking about.
It was one of his first toupees. He had the best hair pieces of anybody.
Oh, yeah. He did. And these are all Eileen Rogers and all kids around. There's Tony. They're all the musicians.
Jerry was the highlight of the performance, though.
I got the big one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing well for sale.
Love.
And afterwards, I got a standing ovation from everyone. I was so stunned. That was a highlight for me. And everybody,
that's great.
I looked out in the audience, and all, well, they show you right at the beginning.
Yeah.
Everybody stood up with a standing ovation.
Wow.
And Tony hadn't even performed yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, you know, halfway in the middle.
Jerry's success had transformed her into a confident young woman.
I could talk to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I'd seen a zillion disc jockeys by that
mm-hmm.
time.
Mm-hmm.
Even when Dave took me with DG Records, we saw a lot of them. I did American Bandstand.
Jerry toured the world performing.
This is when I landed in Hawaii with the Tokyo Can-Can girls. So they were really cute. Then we went to Australia. Later on, I did a tour with Stan Kenton down through Florida. I had a good life. I really did. I've done everything. Mitch always said that to me, too. I saw a lot of the world. I saw a lot of Canada. I worked Montreal 2 or 3 times. Vancouver a lot. Windsor a lot, because that was across from Detroit, where the group was. Had been done all its businesses. We were very, very popular there. So when I went out on my own, I used that actually
mm-hmm.
because it was easy for them to book me into across the river in a big nightclub or
mm-hmm.
a small club. Because they knew me. Heck, I love it all. I worked Detroit a lot. I worked Worcester, New York, California. I wasn't too big in California. I had a heck of a time there. Because after I left the group, they were trying to book me into like Hollywood. I don't fit the Hollywood scene.
For sale.
The recording industry and music was changing.
I never liked the records, and then rock and roll came in, and that was Mitch just saying, I wish I had it 10 years before, because the way I sang, because now we got the uh-ohs coming in, and I did uh-oh. I said, what do you want me to do with this? He said, I have no idea. We need a completely faced kid in here.
Jerry's and her husband Art's lives were changing, too.
Fretting or grieving, why mess around with strife? Never was cut out to step and strut out. Give me the simple life.
When I got pregnant with Tracy, it was time for a renewal of my contract, and they sent it to me and said, what are you going to do? Because I was supposed to go when I was pregnant to record a couple Broadway type tunes. You know, like, oh, who needs it, man? What's on you? Which I really wanted to do, but I was 5 months pregnant. And the doctor said, no way. So I didn't go. So then after the baby was born, Art did the neatest thing. He made the announcement for Tracy, like an LP, I mean a 78. And the name of the song was Tracy Patricia Miller. The orchestra was conducted by the doctor's name. And she weighed the speed of the thing, how much she weighed, and how tall she was. It was really nice. It was red and,
you know. It label.
Really, it was down the label. Yeah, so we sent that to everybody at Columbia. Oh, Jerry's out of here.
Jerry felt it was time to make a change.
It was time to do something else. You know, I'd been doing this all my life, and not that way, but singing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I didn't want anybody else raising Tracy. I wanted to see the first steps. I wanted to get the first award.
Why had Jerry Adams succeeded as a recording artist when so many others like her had not?
You have to be individual. Too many of these kids try to sound like somebody else. You know, when we're going through the screaming and the stuff like that, they all came in screaming and screaming. Or the girls, you have to be individual enough to, when you hear, you say, oh, that's George McClooney, or that's Doris Day, or Jerry. Have your own sound and your own way of doing things. It's a longer haul, but it's more true, and you'll get to where you want to go. That other stuff sound like somebody else, it's mockery. You know, you knew Sarah Vaughan as soon as she opened her mouth. You knew Ella as soon as she opened her mouth. And too many of these kids were so busy trying to scat sing instead of getting into the root of the song. And someone told me years ago that you look at a song and you read it like a poem first, because the music will fall in place. You need to know, what is your presentation of this verse, which is what it is. If you have a kind of range or anything, you won't have a problem, because you'll be singing. That's what Sinatra does. He sings from the lyric first, and then the music just falls in there. Well, Bennett's doing that now, too. What was that one kid's
Marty.
Name? He's from England. He sounds like Sinatra. He's only a young kid.
Oh, I know
sounds
what you're talking
good.
About.
Like Benoit or something like that.
Yeah. He sings wonderfully. He's got a great voice. And he's presenting himself as, you know, okay, he may have... And I think he grew up with Sinatra. That's what I think of his parents. Because even his enunciation, you know, where Sinatra would... broad an A or something like that. He does the same thing. But that's fine. Sinatra's gone. Welcome. Come into the club.
It was amazing to learn about Jerry's life before she was the person in the record store, and at Thanksgiving and Christmas, before she was my surrogate grandmother.
You're still my little guy.
No, thanks.
Her originality and drive got her to where she wanted to be. She ran her career on her terms and decided when it was time to move on to the next adventure.
I had a good life and I went all over the world. It was nice.
It is great that some of her music has been reissued and that I'm able to listen to it 50 years later. I hope this story that Jerry told and I was able to help share helps her children and grandchildren understand this part of her life so they too know how Jerry Adams achieved her life's dream.